get into it. What's up? Welcome to another episode of All Over Voiceover with Kiff VH. I'm your host, Kiff VH. Welcome. And I'm so excited to bring in a really fascinating a guy I've gotten to know fairly well, I would say, over the past, over pandemic. We've known each other through social media and whatnot. We have a ton of similar friends. And then we started doing QuadraFit together and became a good morning running, punching the ground, kicking ass buddies. And found out we have a lot more in common than we thought. And I'm so excited to get a chance to talk to you. Alan Maxson is here. Alan, dude, I mean, it's... well, first of all, like... You do such a wide variety of things, and it's one of the things that made me excited about talking with you. Like,
thank you.
You know, you're a creature performer. You're in motion capture. You're an independent filmmaker. You're in the middle of producing, and directing a feature that you wrote called Alien Planet. I want to talk more about all those things. I just want to start off by like. Dive deep. Like, where? I know you're from Michigan. We're both from Michigan. So tell me about growing up. Where are you from and all that stuff?
Wow, we're going real deep.
Yeah.
I want to backtrack to something you said at the beginning first.
Yeah.
You said we have gotten to know each other very well with punching the ground, hard hitting workouts. I'd like to say, I think the way we got to be so close could not have happened if we didn't go through that, for the simple fact that basically 4 days a week for the last 6 months, we torture ourselves with pain. And I don't know any better way to bond with somebody
other
than like you're almost in tears and you just stand next to the person and go, let's keep going.
Yeah.
That's like bonding right there.
It is.
Forever tied.
Dude, you standing there at the bottom of that sand hill with me and you guys had done 10 and I'd done 8. This is a shorthand, but this is going up and down probably... What a 300-foot sand dune
on huge.
It's on all fours using arm extensions. With Terry Notary was a guest on the show before, so if you listen to the show consistently, you've heard Terry's story, and we've been working out with Terry, going up and down, and I'm looking at Alan going, I don't know, I don't have it, and you're like, come on, one more, you got this, and I was like, you're right, one more, I got this, and I did have it, and it was like constantly meeting that wall of what you think you can do, and then having someone else be able to say not like just do it, come on, suck it up, but no, I believe in you. I believe in you, and I know what you're made of because I see it every morning. Come on.
And it's also genuine too. It's not like we all tend to think of gym buddies, come on, bro, or gym teachers in high school forcing you to do it. But I feel like what we all have with QuadraFit is we are genuine and we're not lying to each other. Like when I looked at you and said that, it wasn't because I wanted to push you to see if you could. It was because I saw you and I was like, no, you actually do. I know you do. I see it.
Right.
And that's what allows us to keep pushing and getting stronger.
That's right.
And it's interesting, that mentality and genuine belief in each other, I think is rare. And we just have such a great group.
Yes.
That's what allows us to grow so well.
Is there anything more powerful than having people believe in you?
No, not at all.
You know, especially if it's not like your parents. Like they're in some respects, it's like it's your colleagues and even in some respects, your competitors. Like you're up against Hunter for mocap stuff. You know what I mean? Like we're all in this mix together, but it's that thing that bonds us together. And dude, I love you. And I love what we've been able to accomplish and the way we've changed our bodies and our minds over the past.
Absolutely.
You know,
feelings are mutual.
Awesome, man.
It's great.
So
anyways, that was a weird sidetrack back to your intro.
No, I appreciate that. I really do. That's awesome. Tell me about growing up. You're from East Michigan, right?
The Thumb area.
Yes.
From Bay City.
Bay City.
Yep. I grew up in Bay City, Michigan. You know, I guess most of the people probably on your show have similar childhoods. Is I started out doing drama class and the musicals in the school. And I was in varsity choir for 4 years. So it was just performing. And I was in I was in bands. I used to scratch on the turntables.
Did you really? Oh my gosh. No kidding.
Because, you know, it was Incubus, Limp Bizkit. It was all popular. And to this day, that's some of my favorite. Like, I love a good turntable solo during a rock band. Like, I absolutely love it. And that's why I think Rage Against the Machines, I always say Tom Morello is my favorite guitarist.
Oh, man.
Because his guitar sounds like turntables.
Yeah. That's so true. That's so true. Oh, my God. I love Tom Morello, too. I love his stuff with Audioslave. He's something else.
Yes. Yes. They're just so talented. But, yeah. Like, you know, that was my early, you know, from eighth grade and on, it was performing, writing, creating. Mm-hmm. And that was, it wasn't even like, I didn't go into it thinking like, this is who I'll be. It was just, I just dove in because it was like, it was great. I was good. I loved it. Yeah. And it made me happy.
Yeah.
And I continued all the way through college. I went to community college for 2 years in Michigan.
Where did you go?
Delta College.
Okay.
It's in, I think technically it's in Saginaw.
Okay.
But I went for broadcasting. So I got my associates in broadcasting.
Yeah. I mean, that's the extent of communications that you get in Michigan, really, is broadcasting, because that's what's there. Yeah.
You can't do any more than that. You know, I meet a lot of people out here who they talk about how they had editing in high school. And I'm like, what fancy high school did you go to? We didn't even have dang computers.
Right.
But then after that, I was like, broadcasting isn't technically what I want to do. I want to do movies and film.
Yeah.
So I ended up going to Full Sail in Florida.
Oh, wow.
And I got my bachelor's in filmmaking. And all throughout all of that, I continued to practice, you know, performance stuff. You know, whenever I was, you know, the broadcasting, most of it is also on camera. It's a lot of teleprompter work and news work.
Wow.
While learning the tech side, because that's part of, if you know anything about current day news, it's no longer a team, a camera guy, audio host. It's a lot of one person.
Yeah.
They give you a tripod, a camera, and your lavalier, and you go out there, you film your on the spot news segment yourself, take it back and edit it, give it to the people that air it for the next segment. You know, it's, you do it all. And that's kind of how we were taught.
Yeah.
And I think that plays heavily into how I work now with the doing it all kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And same with when I went to film school. It was a lot of, while I was working on film as crew and learning editing, directing, camera, when my friends were doing that, I was their talent and vice versa.
Right.
So the continual growth of the filmmaking process, the tech side and the on camera side, it just all continued to grow. Yeah. And when I graduated, it was funny because it was, you know, the recession time.
Okay.
And so I was like a lot of people, I had a bachelor's degree, two associates, and I was working at the mall making minimum wage. And I was like, God damn it. So I spent some time doing that, saving as much as I could till I had enough to move to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And then in 2007, I moved to Los Angeles and I just hustled my way doing everything I could, working in post-production mainly.
That was your inroad. I mean, you had experience work. I mean, it's one of the great things about sort of, I mean, my background is similar of like this patchwork career based on what's around you regionally where you are. And you end up becoming, you know, I resent the phrase jack of all trades, master of none, because no, I'm a master editor. I'm a master shooter. I'm a master audio record engineer. All those things.
Yeah.
You know, granted, I don't have 40 years behind me of doing each of those things, but
you do them all well.
Yeah, exactly. And
I like to joke. I like to say I'm a jack of all trades, master of three, because I would never in a million years call myself a master of camera and lighting.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, I am a master of editing. I have worked on, I guarantee you, if you've watched television, you've seen my work.
Yeah.
I do consider myself a very talented director. I'm good at it.
Yeah.
acting, I would consider myself a very talented, successful actor. I've been in huge budget movies and shows and award-winning things. So, you know, I would say I'm a master of three.
Yes. I take that. I think that's a really great, it's a great way of phrasing it too. And it's because it's funny and it's true, and there's nothing better than funny and true.
Exactly. But then there's certain things too, where it's like you could be, you know, you say audio, like I'm fairly decent at sound design and Foley.
Yeah.
I actually do all the sound design and Foley for all of my past films.
That's great.
And if you specifically watch my last short film called Patina, it's a robot, you hear a lot of awesome squeaking gear sound work in the movement. And especially if you use good headphones and really listen, there's layers in there. And I'm proud of what I did.
That's so great,
I wouldn't call me a master sound design Foley person just because, you know, I haven't been hired to do it for giant projects.
Right.
But I do it so well that I'm confident to not hire someone for mine.
That's right. That's great. If it passes muster on my own project, I'm happy. And and I'll tell you another day about the day I met a master Foley artist on the set of at 20th Century Fox. Well, I'll tell you now.
Tell me.
I was doing ADR for Call of the Wild, matching Harrison Ford, and we get done with the session and I made friends with a post-production supervisor. Great guy. We had lunch together that day. And he was like, do you know what Foley is? I was like, oh, of course I know what Foley is. He was like,
What do I look like?
I mean, I've been sitting here spouting off stuff about Stanley Kubrick and talking about different filmmakers. He was like, well, if you can hang out for like 5 minutes after the session's over, do you have time? I was like, yeah. He was like, I have a surprise for you. So we get done, we wrap in the Marge Simpson stage where we were doing the ADR, and then I'm hanging out, and then John comes and grabs me and takes me down to the Foley stage downstairs. And inside is this wiry, this wonderful madcap dude, like in a black t-shirt and black sweats, and he looked like Curtis Hanson, you know, the filmmaker. He looked like a 70-year-old Jim Henson with short curly hair. He was like, "Hey, how are you, man? Welcome." And I was like, "Hi." He's like, "I'm John. What's your name?" "I'm Kiff. It's great to meet you."
Almost, the way you impersonate him, I'm imagining Brent Spiner from Independence Day.
not far off. And he's like, "Do you know anything about Foley?" And I was like, oh, yeah. He was like, well, I'd love to show you. I'm working on a movie right now. Turns out the movie he was working on was John Wick 3.
And dude, talk about Foley.
Right? I mean, just incredible, the amount of cues. And the way these guys do Foley cues is the way you do mocap cues. You know, it's just like, get it, do it, is it good, move on.
Checklist.
Checklist.
Boom, 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 boom.
Exactly. Boom, boom. Exactly. And he was like, watch this. And he put on this pair of shoes and then put me in the booth and then shows a clip of Cameron Diaz from some movie. And he's walking in, and John comes into the room with me and he's like, watch him. Don't watch the screen. Watch him. So I'm watching him like do these little moves and how he stepped and different textures of things he's stepping on. And he does like five cues in a row. So like walking, but then a jingle and then a shift. And it sounds like he's wearing heels. And he shows me the shoes. He's like, these are like these flat, like sort of like Rockport shoes with little metal tips on the bottom. He said, I bought these to do Bruce Willis's efforts in Hudson Hawk. And they sound like women's high heels now. So
that's amazing.
Isn't it cool? So he would like walk on carpet and then walk on linoleum. And what was fascinating about it was the story it was telling about the environment that the camera would never see. And he did that for like two or three pieces. And it was just like, just the kind of thing that you wish was on a studio tour. But then you're also like, I'm glad this is private. This is just for me.
Yeah.
I can't believe the education I'm getting, you know,
the thing that bums me out about streaming and the lack of people buying Blu-rays is growing up. My favorite behind the scenes to watch were Ben Burtt.
Oh,
when
yes.
You watch him do like Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
And Star Wars is just like, it's amazing to watch these people work. And I think I saw a great one on Lord of the Rings at one point that you're just like, wow.
Oh, man. The supplementals are the greatest part of it. It's just like food. Like Robert Rodriguez's 10-minute film school that he has on every one of his DVDs and like all the stuff on the, I've been doubling down on physical media as of late for that very reason, you know, just to continue to feed myself with like the science behind. So there's a whole documentary about the science of Interstellar on the Interstellar Blu-ray. It was like,
oh, nice.
Fascinating. Anyway, you can see we'll easily turn into
well worth a rabbit trail.
Well worth a rabbit trail, without a doubt. So you moved to Los Angeles, and how is it that you found yourself in post production? What of the things that got you in? Was it an in? Was it an ad? Was it a reel? Like how did you crack that nut?
Well, as most people who look into moving to Los Angeles find out, nobody will hire you unless you already live here.
Yes.
So I moved up here and I was like, you know what? Shot in the dark. Let's just do it. And I stayed with my aunt and uncle in Arizona on the drive for one night.
Yeah.
And my uncle, he was like, oh yeah, some guy I went to high school with, he owns a shop out there. I'll recommend you to him. And he did. And I went and met him, and he owned this little hole-in-the-wall mom-and-pop shop where they edit actor demo reels.
Awesome.
And I thought I passed the test. He later told me he only hired me because I was friends with his buddy, or I was a nephew of his buddy. He's like, if you weren't, I would never have hired you. So, but since then, so he hired me. So I spent, you know, a year there editing actor demo reels.
Wow.
And I've edited for some very fantastic people, and I got to know a lot of people in the industry doing it.
Wow.
And then I eventually moved on and got a job doing freelance, and it just kept snowballing and trickling. Moved my way up from a post PA to an AE, assistant editor, to an editor, and now I'm a lead editor on most shows I work on.
Amazing.
And I just went down that path because it paid the bills. And as we know, you being an actor doesn't always. And if it does, it's sporadic. One month it won't.
That's right.
So, and especially during, you know, the pandemic, I always joke, Ice-T saved my 2020 because I edit his crime show on Oxygen.
That's so great. Oh, man. So, you get a foothold in, and it leads you into what now? For some people, that would be enough. I'm living the dream. I'm working as an editor in Hollywood, and I'm the lead editor, and I'm working on Ice-T's show. What is it about? What is it about?
What a goal.
Yeah, I mean, it is, but it is like, that's the funny thing. Like you come out here because I that so resonates with me of like, trying, once you get out here going, I just need to be in that marketplace. I just need to be there. I don't know what I want to do. I could say, oh, I want to win an Academy Award for best screenplay or whatever. But in reality, it's like, I want to be out here in the mix with these people, seeing how high I can jump. And I want to be alongside them. And I want to be part of the thing that I love. And that's enough. So like what, you know, you're alongside that, and most people probably don't know you from your editing. They know you from certainly one of the more high profile things that you've done with Godzilla King of the Monsters is King Ghidorah. Like, you know, and the shorts that you've made and those things, like what's that aspect of your personality that drives you to explore that? Is that where you want to be? Do you want to be and how did you get there for people who are listening, like who are really interested in motion capture or even beyond that? This is turning into an essay question. I'll parse it back out. What is that about that you want to be doing that's driving you?
Well, when I was getting knee deep into post-production and I was moving up, I took probably a good, I don't know, 3, 4, maybe even 5 years of, I don't think I performed at all. I was just focusing on getting my feet on the ground.
Yes.
Because as anyone knows, it's expensive and it's hard to live in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people come here and have it a lot easier. They have help from parents or just they come from money or something, but I had no help. So I just had to get my feet on the ground and be secure so that I can genuinely just eat and afford rent.
Yes.
And once I got to that spot where I was in that groove and I was secure, I was starting to crave something more, because editing is not my passion. Editing is not, it's not truly what I want as an end goal.
Yeah.
And it was bringing me down, and I was like, I'm not happy. It's not what my heart is. Like, I remember being in high school and college, and when I was performing and acting, being passionate and excited. Yeah. And now it's another paycheck.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to get back into creative juices that excite me. And after doing lots of hard thinking and focusing on an actual goal and a path to be on, because I didn't want to just willy-nilly go on a few paths. I wanted to set my sights and focus.
Yeah.
I was like back to the heart of where I came from, performing. And my thought after deciding that was, but I don't want to just be a performer, because knowing my type, my body, my look, my voice, the type of characters I would be cast in weren't giving me that desire, craving that I wanted.
I totally understand what you mean. Yeah.
And so I thought, I've always loved, out of every movie, the creature, the monster. When I would buy action figures, I never bought the human. And so it just seemed right. I was like, this is it. I want to be a creature performer. I want to bring to life non-human characters.
Yeah.
And I set that as a goal. And I started networking with every person I can. I went out and did as many films as I could. I started doing student films. I found student films that needed monsters just to build a reel.
Yeah.
And then I had this small reel of student film monsters, and I took it to an agent, and he was like, listen, this isn't a lot and it's not anything credible, but I see your drive and I don't think you're going to stop. So I'm signing you.
Wow.
And I signed with him, and I kept going, and I started taking many more classes with movement, stunt, performance, acting technique, scene study, everything regular actors do, because there is no difference between creature acting and human acting.
That's right.
There is no difference.
Yes.
And so I took all the acting courses I could, got physical, just kept pushing in every direction. I attempted to study mime for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I could technically say I studied mime for 2 or 3 years on a regular basis, but I couldn't do a thing that would impress you for the life of me. but it's movement. And I tell you, I took away so much from those studies that I use in every monster.
Really?
But you wouldn't know it, because it's not trapped in a box or pulling a string.
Yeah. It's like the subtle internal stuff, right? That kind of...
It's almost like what Terry talks about with us is, he calls it strength in the core. In mime, it's called suspension. Nothing is loose. Don't let your ass hang. Don't let your fingers hang. Everything has life. You make sure not a single inch of you is boring. And that's why a lot of times when you see like Doug Jones, he's got the fingers.
Yeah.
That's suspension. And Doug Jones is a mime. He's a true mime. He actually studied with Marceau.
Did he really? I didn't know that.
So he did. Man. And actually my mime teacher studied with Marceau as well.
Wow. That's fascinating.
Yep.
Oh man.
And so that's the path I took. And I was so passionate. And I did all these films. I worked almost every actor job for free for maybe the first 3 years, maybe 4 years of pursuing it professionally, just because I was like, it doesn't matter if I'm being paid, this is the goal I want.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, I don't act for free now. I just don't have the time.
Of course.
And I've outgrown that.
Yeah. And that's part of your development process. And especially if it's like you don't have the school for it, the school is what you have to create for yourself. And
yes.
The real pay is the opportunity to do and to get a little bit of tape. And like, you know, you do get to a place in your career where you look at a breakdown and go, I ain't doing that. But you also realize, you go, that's someone else's work. There's some kid 5 years behind me who is needing that experience.
Yes. Yes.
They need to be on that set, not me.
And you start to learn too. You start to learn people fight for you. So example, I was on a shoot 2 or 3 days ago, and I have another film coming up that I'm going to play a creature in. And they were recommending and fighting for me to be in that movie. And so it goes from
so awesome.
Knocking on doors and begging to be on screen to suddenly you get calls and like, we've had a million meetings about you and you didn't even know it. Will you be in our film?
Oh, that's so amazing. It's so amazing. It's everything you hope for. And it's those little moments that just make you go, not like, oh, I've made it, but that it warms your heart because you see the generosity of the creative people here, you know?
And I reached my goal because I'm proud of my work now.
Yeah.
Editing, yes. I'm proud that I went through the trenches and made my way and got it awesome. But I don't get the same feeling watching the shows I've edited as I do. Like if you watch my demo reel, maybe you can like put it in the link or something.
Sure.
It's 3 minutes of the last decade of my monster career. And every time I watch it, I'm just so proud. And I recently updated it with new footage from last year and I posted it, and just watching everybody comment like, wow, amazing.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's what I do this for, is because that's how I feel when I watch other monsters on screen.
Yeah.
And I just love it. You know, creatures, monsters, they're so awesome. And I'm not just saying this because I do it, but literally every other creature actor does not get enough props for what they do.
Oh, man.
Monster and creature performance is the most underrated physical performer on screen history.
Can you expand on that idea a little bit more? I'd love to hear just from an inside's perspective of, because there are certain, you know, silent/creature performances that still blow me away. Like Karloff still blows me away as the Frankenstein monster. You know, some of the OG characters, and then the subtle stuff that you see both Doug Jones do I mean, his stuff in Hellboy, and I mean, like, in Pan's Labyrinth with the creature with the eyes, like the just this innovative movement signature.
Yes.
Talk from the inside of that. Talk to me a little bit about what that, why that, not necessarily why you think it's underrated, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think it's because the viewer doesn't realize what goes into it. So take for example, let's talk about Harry and the Hendersons.
Yes.
A movie that the average viewer would watch and they would laugh and they'd enjoy it and be like, great, that was a cute, funny movie from the 90s or whatever it was. And great, moving on. Never think twice about it. If they did, their second thought would be, yeah, John Lithgow, that's like when he was young, but he still looked old, you know?
Right.
No one thinks about, I believe it was
Kevin Hall. Yeah,
Hall was in that suit.
Yeah.
And imagine being in that suit. One, it's huge. It's heavy. Yeah. It's claustrophobic and it's hot.
There's
that alone.
The face rig too, right? Like there's a remote
animatronic
face head rig.
That alone is a feat just to be in and not scream. But on top of it, the thing that people don't think about is, think about the performance. In that movie, you cry. There's multiple moments where you're sad.
Oh, yeah.
And it's because you believe Harry.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the animatronics in his face. You don't see Kevin Hall's face. you see animatronics. Yeah. So what makes you believe it? Oh, it's his movement, his yeah. posture, his subtleties in his shoulder, his head nods, the turns, the way he carries his body during each particular emotional moment. It is so powerful that he makes you cry and you don't see his face and he doesn't have a single line. Yet, right. most people don't know who's even under there. I mean, yeah. it's shameful to me. I even had to say, I think it was Kevin Hall under there. You know, the fact that I had to double think myself for a moment, that right there is shameful and terrible because it's a fantastic performance. And I think that's what's underrated about creature performers is mm-hmm. I think the average audience unintentionally
yeah.
doesn't understand the amount of respect that actually should be given.
And in a way, like, you know, you want the respect, but you also want the audience to go, that's just Bigfoot. That's yes. just the Predator. That's just an alien, and not thinking about the guy and like trying to find a way to disappear as a human character. I mean, the work that we've been doing with the ape arm extensions to try to make our human movement signature vanish so that yes. it's so complete that the audience is transported by these apes that yes. ride horses and carry guns.
And they believe it when we're on the trails. People yeah. are truly, they come to us and like, whoa, we were genuinely taken back for a moment because you guys really looked like apes.
Yeah. And how animals so freak out. Work. When the dogs and horse, there was a horse one time we were doing a workshop and a horse freaked out and the woman cussed us out. We were like, well, sorry, it's a public park.
I must have not been there for that.
It was one of those like one-off Terry workshops, you know, where we're up in Calabasas for a day. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
and you know, a lot of the, I think, I don't want to put full blame on anybody because there's a million reasons that lead up to this silent hero thing. But I think one of the biggest issues is filmmakers and studios don't give the credit. Like in Harry Henderson's, Kevin Peter Hall is credited, but it should be like bigger and more. It should say Kevin Peter Hall as
yeah.
Harry.
Yes.
And same with even, you know, Godzilla. I mean, I'm so grateful. We were credited, it said King Ghidorah performance capture, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But before that credit, under the cast, it says King Ghidorah as himself. Yes. And a lot of people see that. The average audience stops reading after that. Mm. And yes, it's a funny joke. And you go, ha ha, he played himself. But the average Joe doesn't keep reading that, oh, performance capture. Whoa, someone actually brought those movements to the computer before the animators right. dove deep into it.
Right. That's right.
So there's lot of little things that I think just add up to it being an unsung hero type of a moment for almost every creature performer.
Absolutely true. Oh, man. Talk to me about that process, about that. Like, you know, you clearly put in the work and the time and all of that to get in a place where that opportunity came to you. And, you know, you told me before we started how long you actually worked on that picture, how quickly you can complete a shot list of motion capture requirements. And you had the unique experience too of like working with two other guys to build this character. What was that experience like?
Honestly, Godzilla was one of the greatest experiences. It's mm-hmm. one of my favorite jobs. We just had so much fun. We worked for a total of 3 days. And if you've seen this movie,
it's amazing.
The movie, we're in a ton of it. And we did all of that performance capture in 3 days, but it makes sense because it was so well organized. Mm-hmm. That's all we needed.
Wow.
And what we did was we had one day we came in before those three where Jason, Richard, and I sat down and we just watched. We saw the entire movie a year before it was released to the public. And it had very rough pre-vis CG kaiju in it so we could get an idea of what we're going to be doing.
Gotcha. Was there action in the animatics, or was it just kind of like he's attacking a building or he's blowing fire or he's like,
there was action.
Okay.
There was action in it for sure. Some of it was more rough than others. Some of it was more smooth, but you know, it was just, they were clearly still working in post and they had a whole year ahead of them still.
Yeah.
But the movie was fantastic. And we're like, great. Now we have an idea and we're excited. The next day we came in and started our 3-day process. And what they did was Mike Daugherty, he had a big monitor in the volume. He would play a clip of that moment, whether it's part of the fight, a stunt, a walk, a crawl, whatever the moment was, we'd watch it. The three of us would get together, kind of walk through it, do a step through, and then we'd rehearse it. We'd do 2-3, worst case scenario, 4 takes. And then they, great, next shot. We'd watch it, study it, walk through, do it again. Wow. And it was so well organized because they had that previs.
Yeah.
And because it was very specific. Like when you pay attention to the Godzilla movie, the story of the kaiju is very specific. Hmm. They all have goals. King Ghidorah is attempting to be the king of the others. He's taking over. When he doesn't get his way, he thrashes out into buildings. Uh-huh. And he tries to get these other, like at one point, Rodan is on his side.
Yeah.
And so it's very like there's intention and thought and a story arc. So it's not just random battles. We roll around and smack each other. It was there's very specific plot points to our movement. Made it so easy to just check off each list and go down. And by the end of it, the last scene we did was we all played different kaiju and we were bowing down to Godzilla at the end moment. And we all got in our little positions and did a bow. And so we went through the whole movie chronological order and did the movement out in that way.
Amazing. Oh, it's fascinating. So
yeah, it was so fun.
As a filmmaker, how does that experience of, you know, getting to work with Mike on this film and work with these collaborators, and especially like the previs and your knowledge of post-production as it stands already, how does that inform your ability to go into, not necessarily inform your ability, but inform your process as you go about the business of making your short film like Patina, working on your new film, Alien Planet? Like what's that experience? How is that informed by your experience?
Genuinely, all three, my acting, my editing, and my filmmaking have all just blended and helped each other immensely.
Hmm.
So even when it comes to something like performing, knowing editing and filmmaking and having been on the other side of the camera has, I think, made me a better creature actor by far, just for the simple fact that most monsters are filmed specifically in a way for camera, or filmed for how they're going to edit it, filmed in a way to have a camera trick or a special effect or visual effect. There's a lot of technicalities involved, and it's not just acting. It's acting, but being aware of the technical side, whether it's practical or CG.
Yeah.
It's being aware of that, because all of these things always have camera tricks and setups, or I'm working with the effects artist who shoots the blood cannon at the right moment and stuff like that to coincide with it and hit the right angle or forced perspective, things like that, that they do for the characters I play.
Yeah.
And so filmmaking has helped me for sure be a better creature actor. And then vice versa, acting allows me to be a way better editor and director because I know how an actor is thinking when I am talking to them for a scene.
Yes.
I know how to direct or explain or give a reference of what I'm looking for a slightly different performance because I've been in their shoes many times.
Yeah.
And then editing is the same, because I know how emotion comes out of a person.
Yes.
I know how it's portrayed on screen and how it should flow in a way that, if you don't know that, some editors can do, you know, let's use an example of drastic terms would be, you watch a YouTuber, their edits are chop, 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 chop.
Yep.
And if there's any emotion in it, it's gone.
Right.
Whereas if you know how a subtlety in someone's face, just the slight change of of eye movement marks the moment in their thought process of their character arc changing to the next emotion, you don't want to get rid of that. So when you're editing, you want to make sure you're cutting at the right moment and to the right angle or size to portray that emotion correctly. And it's such subtleties that you might not realize. And I feel like generally just those three strengths specifically in the last couple of years have really blended together in a way that I'm almost having a hard time telling them apart. I use all three of them every time. And so it's definitely been a growing inside me process of those three things merging. And it feels like it's one big pot of filmmaking mush.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. It's so true. It can't not affect. It can't not inform. And it does make you more, you know, along with the practicality of it, along with being able to schedule appropriately and to be able to feel your way through how much time, how much budget I need, all those other things, it makes you so much more intuitive on all those fronts as you work with your collaborators to build that, to tell that story. It's beautiful. And when you can explain it on set, when you're working with, you know, with great actors, do you, tell me a bit about the process of Alien Planet, how this film has kind of come about and, you know, what your goal is and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. So, I guess from just the beginning of it, tell me if I already said this, I don't remember. I've said it a million times over the last few days for this campaign. I started writing it maybe 2 years ago.
Really?
I started conceptualizing it for a very, very long time. I've always wanted to make a sci-fi movie in the vein of Enemy Mine with Louis Gossett Jr. Yeah. and Dennis Quaid.
Yeah.
And I have to give a shout out. When anyone mentions that movie, everyone goes, oh, the Dennis Quaid movie. But I have to say, Louis Gossett Jr. is the heart of that movie. He makes that movie, and it's another unsung hero.
Yeah.
He, yes, gets second billing in that movie, but he is going through so much torture of those prosthetics, and his performance as an actor is just phenomenal without makeup, but even with makeup, he plays through it. He projects through those prosthetics so beautifully. That movie is one of the most heartwarming, touching films in sci-fi.
Yeah.
Okay. And so for many, many years, I've wanted to make a movie in the vein of that.
Yes.
And I started conceptualizing it a couple of years ago after I made my first film, which is a very terrible B movie called Christmas with Cookie. And I made this movie for $1,000.
Oh my God.
For the simple fact that that's all I had. And I was like, let's make a movie for that.
Yeah.
And because you can't really make a movie for $1,000, I leaned into it. I wrote the script to be aware that it's a bad movie. And so it actually ended up getting a pretty decent cult following. There's a lot of big cookie lovers out there. And they enjoy that terrible, terrible movie that I can even barely sit through. But because my next thought was this Alien Planet, it was not named that at the time, but I thought to myself, nobody's gonna help fund me if Christmas with Cookie is my only thing to show for.
Yes.
So I took a break and I wrote a short film within my budget. I put a little bit more money into it, and it's 10 minutes long, so the money went farther.
Yeah.
And it had much more substance and a serious tone. The end ends up having a less serious tone because it's a little bit of a joke at the end.
Yeah.
But the whole time, the tension and the movie takes itself serious, whereas Cookie did not.
Yeah.
So I made that as kind of a proof of, you know, delivery. I can deliver a product.
Yes.
And that's
Patina. That's Patina, right?
Patina. Yeah. Yep. And if anyone is crazy enough to watch both of them, they're both on Amazon Prime. But then after that, I started getting back to what is now called Alien Planet, and just slowly working on breaking down the story and the plot and the arc and characters and stuff. And while working, because I do so much with editing and acting and training,
yeah,
I don't have a lot of free time.
Yeah.
So it was taking a very long time, but then the pandemic hit and I sat down and I was like, I told my wife, I was like, Kaylee, I'm never going to have an opportunity like this again.
Yeah.
Like nobody's going anywhere for a very long time. So I made a rule. I said 8 hours, Monday through Friday, I'm writing the script like it's a job.
Oh man.
Brilliant. And it took me, I think like 2 months and I finished it.
Brilliant.
That's full what it feature length.
If you don't prioritize it and make it the thing you're doing, it will remain a hobby.
Yes. Yes.
You know?
And when I was done doing it, I went through, I think I'm on draft maybe 12 or 13 now.
Yeah.
And it's funny because Christmas with Cookie never made it past the first draft. And we even made a joke to it in the opening credits. We jokingly called it, it's a first draft production. Right. So this one, you know, I took my time and I made sure I wrote it well. And in fact, since then, I already have lots of things that I want to change and adjust to make it even better as time has gone by, making the spec trailer and doing the crowdfunding. My brain has continued to be creative and think about the story. And it's going to be so, I mean, it already is, I think, a very well thought out. Every actor who's auditioned, even people who did not get cast, has complimented the story and the writing so much, which to me is like amazing because I'm not a writer.
Mm-hmm.
I evidently I am now, but like, I would never have considered myself one. And so hearing just the positive, like genuine love for the sides that they all auditioned for made me so happy because I put in so much work and so much time. And it'll be even better when I revisit it after this campaign.
Yeah.
But before the campaign, I thought, okay, I have patina as a proof of something I've delivered. Now I need a proof of concept for Alien Planet.
Yeah.
So I thought of it as an investment for the campaign. I said, I've seen and supported many Indiegogos and Kickstarters.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want mine to be the best video out of all of them I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I've never seen anyone make a full-on trailer. I've seen scenes. I've seen people talking over concept art.
Yeah.
And so I said to myself, I'm going to make an actual trailer.
Yeah.
And I ended up, I got distracted. I just saw a text that we just hit a big goal mark on our campaign right now.
Dude, amazing. Amazing. That's so great.
I said I wanted to make a trailer. So I drew up all of the characters. I made breakdown PDFs of each character with my hand drawings, reference pictures from other movies, and even pictures of things like tree bark for texture.
Yeah.
Like I went really deep in what I wanted. And then I hired Aiden Casserly to do concept poster art, which is the poster art for the campaign of the two aliens fighting.
Amazing.
And it's hilarious. I'll have to show you at some point my drawing. I drew that scene of the guy holding him and he has the gun and he's shooting him and his bones sticking out of his arm. And it looks like a first grader drew it. But I gave that to Aiden along with my PDFs of references.
Yeah.
And I said, this is what I want. And I also had a poster reference. I gave him a PDF of, had to have like 8 or so posters of other movies of the style and the color, the tone.
Yeah.
And I went real deep. I had a true vision that I wanted him to help me bring to life. And he did so beautifully. The characters look exactly the way I want them to in that poster.
Amazing.
And it's well made. It's fantastic. I love it. I'm proud of what he did. And then I took that poster and I said, now let's make this the trailer.
Yeah.
And this is where my editing skills came in.
Mm-hmm.
So for almost every show I work on, I also have to edit the trailer from scratch, which involves working with the story producer to create and write the best VO that tells the story, and using music, sound effects, and sound bites along with the help of the story producer make this trailer tell the story of what you're about to see and why you should watch the show.
It's like making a short film log line of what you're trying to do. And
absolutely,
and every part needs to be exactly wordsmithed and perfect with the maximum amount of impact.
And I think the training of editing that for many TV shows is what truly made, honestly, it was very easy to write the script for that trailer.
Wow.
What I did was I wrote the VO, which we'll get into in a moment because it was so beautifully read by you.
Well, thank you.
And then the sound bites, I went through my script just like I do with editing. Instead of pulling sound bites of already filmed footage, I went through the script and thought, what sound bites will perfectly fit to tell these moments within the VO that needs to tell the story?
Yeah.
Some of them, because the script has so much detail and scenes reference past scenes, because, you know, it's a 70-page script.
Right.
Some of the bites I altered. Some of the stuff in the trailer are altered and different in the actual script, but I altered it to fit the trailer to tell the story more precisely, because you can't have a cluttered mess of story in a minute, 20 seconds.
That's right.
It has to be very simple and precise.
Yeah.
And I wrote this script. I don't know if I sent you the script, but I have a version where it's the VO and the dialogue in the same script.
Yeah.
And that's what we shot. We shot it all in one day, a 12-hour day. We shot the entire thing.
Amazing.
And I took the footage back. I started cutting it together. And then I reached out to my good QuadraFit buddy, Kiff, who knew was the greatest VO master in the world.
Thanks, man. It's so fun. It was so fun to collaborate with you on the project, because you could see and hear how deep your passion is for it. And like, and you know, I'm in the process of getting my producing certificate at UCLA Extension, and like the spirit of making is so powerful, and it's like, I want to help my friends do things. And if I've got, and if I can save you time, money, and effort, let's do it. And because this thing is about what we can accomplish together, and being able to help you do that. And I remember seeing the first cut, and you were like, you know, and it is, it's this collaborative thing of like, ah, he used that reed. I thought he was going to go with the reed where it was like, in a world, but the reed, and we talked about this, like the reed that you chose was more subdued, and it let the action and the energy of the story come forward more so than, you know, a big Don LaFontaine impression.
Yeah. Well, all of your reeds were absolutely fantastic, but they do have different vibes.
Yeah.
And I went with the more, it felt natural, but also commanding, because you walked a fantastic line of get your attention in a world type of scenario, but also the line of, hey, but I'm not being corny. This is genuinely me speaking.
Yeah.
So now that I have your attention and you trust me, here's why you like this movie. And you walked that fine line so well that was why I chose that take.
Awesome.
Because it was just the perfect blend.
Awesome. You know, I'm really, I'm honored to have been able to collaborate. I'm thrilled that I gave you options and that you found what you needed in that batch, and that I didn't feel like, you know, like that dreaded, hey, so this was fun. Can you, I don't know that you understood the tone, you know what I mean? Like, and I, of course we'd do it until you got it right. But it was still like, I was so happy that you got what you needed and stuff. And
I was so happy that you did it. It was great. And in fact, fun thing for all the VO people listening is, I have some awesome surprises that I'll actually tell you right now. I'll reveal it in this.
What's that?
Is one, there's an alternate trailer coming out. I That's also awesome. Had my very good friend Jessica Blue do a read of it.
Oh, amazing.
So we have a female version coming out, and she is just as talented. She's so wonderful. She's, you know, best. Her. You worked a handful
Jessica.
Of
yeah.
times.
Yeah, she's great.
And so we have, and she has the most wonderful voice. Yeah. If you were to have a female do a sci-fi, like, this is a very masculine trailer. Yeah. It's dudes, yes, it is, fighting, blood, screaming, yelling. Like, there's a lot of testosterone.
Yes.
And she has the perfect voice to bring that trailer to women as well. Oh, her amazing. Voice sounds, it's almost like it has the same vibe as if, like, the beginning of Dark Crystal or Sigourney Weaver voiced it. Like, she's powerful and strong,
amazing.
but feminine, and it's wonderful. And
that's so great, dude.
That being said, with the two options, there will be as many options as the backers will allow.
Yes.
I am releasing a voiceover perk.
Oh, wow.
So if you buy this perk and support this film, you can record at home the dialogue to the trailer, and I will professionally edit it in and deliver it for you to use for your demo reels.
That's amazing. That's an amazing perk.
You can put it in your social media. You can put in your demo reel. I will post it on the Alien Planet social media, so it's an official trailer, and you can say that you did voiceover for my film.
Dude, that is so amazing. What a fantastic perk, and so generous of your time and support and helping VO people help, you know, build their reels. And like you said early on, like, it's about every opportunity to continue to nurture and build that skill and getting to work with a director and have it cut professionally and to have something to be able to show. That's huge, man. Thank you so much. And thank you for sharing that with my audience. That's amazing.
Absolutely. So anyone listening, like, if you are starting, even if you're not starting out, if you just need more stuff in your reel, I know, sometimes it's expensive to do, go to people to get demos.
Yes.
People pay to get non-airing demos made so you have something to show for to get hired.
Absolutely.
I guarantee you this perk is going to be cheaper than that. and it's going to be for something awesome. And it's also going to help to get this movie actually made.
Yeah.
So, you know, anyone who's listening, if you need that or are interested, please support. I would be honored and happy to make a trailer with your voice in it.
Dude, that's amazing. Well, I'm going to put the link into to your fundraising, to the campaign in this embedded with this podcast. But tell me, how can people find you and find more information and how they can support the effort to make Alien Planet?
Totally. So if you want to support Alien Planet, which I hope you do, you know, the thing is support means so many things. Mm. If you can afford a contribution, that is the greatest thing I could ask for. Even if you can only put $20 in, it genuinely will help. This movie is going to be very expensive with all these makeup and prosthetics. So every dollar counts, and thank you. No matter if you put in $1, thank you.
Yeah.
But if for some reason you cannot afford, because I get it, money is tight, share it. Please, like, if you know someone who's a fan of sci-fi, if you have a friend who you're like, oh, I remember hearing them say that they're like a big fan of Star Trek, or, you know, send it to them because they will like this.
Yeah.
So help any way you can with shares and contributions. But if you want to find it, go to Indiegogo and search Alien Planet.
Okay.
It's also on all of the social medias.
Yes.
Alien Planet Film on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
Amazing.
And every post I post has the link to the campaign. So you will find it if you search it.
Amazing.
And that's for the movie. And if you want to follow me in my creature career as a performer, I have a lot of awesome things coming up. This last month, I had 3 creature jobs, and I'm doing one. I'm flying to Vegas on Friday for another.
Amazing.
So if you guys want to follow all the cool monsters I play, my Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook is monster_Maxon. And that'll also be in the links.
Yep.
And if you for some reason forget how to spell Maxon, just creatureactor.com is the simplest thing. There's links on my website.
Amazing. Oh, that's so great. That's so great. Dude, I mean, I could sit here and talk with you all afternoon, and we would nerd out about Planet of the Apes and fiction and all the amazing things that that make life awesome. But I can't tell you how proud and lucky I feel to call you my friend and my brother, and all the, you know, just this tremendous amount of work that you're putting into bringing something cool to the world to continue to inspire the next generation of filmmakers and sci-fi fans, as well as to continue to grow your own career. It's just fantastic. And
dude, thank you. Like, the feelings are genuinely mutual. Like, I love you. I consider you a brother. And there's something about, we've talked about this before, something about where we came from. We came from the same upbringings.
Yeah.
And I get you. Yeah. I know who you are, Kip. I see into your soul. I see you. I get it. I see your wounds. I see your healed strength.
Yes.
And I fucking love it. Yeah, like, thanks, you are amazing and you're talented and all the same things you just said to me. Like, it's an honor to know you because you have so much awesome stuff behind you and ahead of you. And I'm glad I got to jump in to watch from here on out.
Amen. I feel the same way, brother. That was so great. Thank you so much. I love you. Much love. And I encourage my audience to follow Alan at @monster_Maxson and other places as well. Please support Alien Planet in any way you can. Share it. Check out the trailer. Compete. Get your voice heard. Participate. And keep making amazing things. Because I believe that's what we're called to do, is to create. It's awesome. All right, brother. I will let you go. Thanks for joining us. And thank you for listening.
Thank everybody.
Listener. And have a great one. We'll talk to you soon. Peace.
Bye, everyone.
This has been All Over VoiceOver with Kiff VH. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes and give us a positive rating. It truly helps. Follow me on Twitter at Kiff VH or on Instagram at Kiff VH or on Vero at Kiff VH. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you soon. Claim victory and depart the field.
Werewolf?
Yeah.